I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Wise Men Say podcast. Good to have you along this evening. No Gareth this week. So myself, Stephen Goldsmith, is joined by Chris Weatherspoon for the first time in a long time.
Hello.
Good evening, Christopher. You okay?
Hello, Stephen. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. If you are listening and Chris says something that winds you up or that you don't agree with, and you want to fire abuse at anybody on social media, make sure you just tag him in it and not the podcast, because he's speaking for himself and not on behalf of us.
See, this is why I don't come on.
But I know, actually, no, it depends. You know, generally, when we're not playing very well, people are starting to agree with the stuff you say, Chris. So on the other hand, if Chris says something that you do really agree with, make sure you tag the podcast praising us for those opinions. So just as long as we're all clear. Joining us as well is Mickey Love. Good evening, Michael.
All right. Interesting, isn't it? I'm on a podcast with Chris Weatherspoon. I've been the most boring contributor so far, so I'm doing well.
Oh,
give us a chance.
He's been thinking about that all day since he realised I was coming on, hasn't he? That's why he was 10 minutes late. He's been writing that one down.
Got me script out.
Well, yeah, there's going to be some morning and night negativity, probably, isn't there? You can blame us entirely, because we're always cautious with gushing Sunderland with praise, as you know. We always sort of err on the side of caution on that, and we get called miserable for it. But we, you know, I guess we've just seen it all before, and we're languishing in Division 3, and we're realistic. And last week, I think, like, we let ourselves go a little bit in terms of the praise that we put on the players. And even though we conceded late to Wickham, I thought I saw enough in that game to show something different from this group of players, and we look really comfortable. And Gareth was talking about winning like 13 from the next 19 or something, and of course we've not won any of the two games we've had since then. And it's a recurring theme, this, isn't it, of Sunderland's League One exploits, that we can't, whenever there's a chance we can go top of the league, barring the Sheffield Wednesday game this year, we just seem to fluff our lines, doesn't it? And it doesn't matter who the manager is, it doesn't matter what the team is, what style of player it is, this keeps happening, doesn't it? And it's beyond frustrating.
Yeah. I think, like, to be fair, like, when you were on about the Wickham game there, like, obviously, yeah, we conceded in the last minute, but I thought, like, that second half performance was, like, one of the most encouraging of the season, because I thought we lost it. I thought, like,
in reaction to going behind as well. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, let's be honest, that second half, we could have scored two or three, and it wouldn't have been undeserved. And fair enough, look, the first half, I don't think we were very good. But, like, the second half, usually, often it's the other way around with us. We start like a house on fire, then we fade as the game goes on. So I thought that was really encouraging. And I think, I don't know, like, I know we're going to talk mainly about Saturday, but I know there's a bit of an idea that, oh, well, that goal knocked us for the Lincoln game. I don't really know about that. I
don't agree with that.
I think the Lincoln game, I think the pitch didn't help us. I think the way we approached the game, we certainly played into Chris McGuire's hands. And I don't know, it was one of them nights where it felt like everything that could go wrong did. And to be honest, Saturday, performance and result-wise, wasn't really much of an improvement, in my opinion. I thought we started the game all right. I thought Stewart should score, what is it, 6 minutes in or something, very early doors. But other than that, I know, and we'll talk about it, I know the manager came out and kind of said 75, 85 minutes, it was a good away performance. I really don't agree. And I've been one of the people who's praised him for telling it like it is when we've lost or dropped points and that. And I'm not sure what he's saying there. Because, you know, like before we scored, like the end of the first half, they had three like really good chances. Like Hoffman took one over the bar. Sergen made like an outstanding block. And I think Irene Flanagan was another who made a block. And they were really like piling the pressure on. So I don't really get this idea that it was a decent performance.
We'll get on to the manager in a bit. Mick, anybody who wasn't watching the game, do you want to give us a summary of how you saw it? A quick one. Don't talk us through minute by minute.
No, I think I agree largely with what Chris said. I think it was a poor performance overall. I think the game lacked a lot of intensity, which you ironically don't really expect when you go to Rappington. You expect it to be, if not a high-quality game, a high-tempo and a high-energy game, but it wasn't that at all. It was played at quite a pedestrian pace, and we struggled to control it. I mean, even the goal, I mean, we started the second half brightly, but it's a deflection from quite a speculative shot from the edge of the area. Fair play, took the strike on. But it's not as if we kind of cut them open or created anything of note. But then we've gone and shot ourselves in the foot like we did at Shrewsbury, where you win the game, you should be in control of it. They go down to 10 men even later in the game, and our game management has just got to be so, so much better. And I think Saturday has really rung the alarm bells for me, because I think on Tuesday against Lincoln, although it was a terrible performance and result, there was enough to mitigate it to say, right, it's a one-off. We had the lads. I mean, fair enough, we chose to play the game. But we had the lads like Diamond, who maybe are quite up with Patterson, who looks a bit cheaty in goal. Maguire should have been sent off before he scored his hat-trick. There's plenty of stuff you can mitigate it with or put it down to a one-off. But Saturday, there was no excuse. We had lads coming back. We're going to Rappington, who we should be able to beat comfortably. And we turned in a terrible performance. And we've come away with a really bad result, which has kind of naturally led the supporters kind of questioning whether this team has got it in them to go up automatically.
I agree with that, Mick, because I think, you know, the Lincoln game, like you said, you can kind of take in that we aren't unbeatable and we're gonna lose some games. I think we play that game 9 out of 10 times and we beat them. I know we watched it together, Mick and I said then that I think we weren't patient enough, and I think if we'd scored first, I think their game plan would have went out the window, they would have folded. We all know what happened, and you can kind of take it on the chin, but it's inexcusable Saturday, the same as Shrewsbury you mentioned there. Now every team will look back at a season and say, oh, coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, if we defended better on that game, if we didn't miss an open goal on that game, you know, do you know what I mean? Like every side has these games that they look back on hindsight and say that's what cost us. However, those two games, when you're playing against sides, mid-table sides in this division, and you have a man advantage and you're winning the game, it's inexcusable not to win the game. Yeah. And those 4 points, I'm worried will be the 4 points that will cost us now this season. Because am I right in saying if we had those 4 points, we'd be on 2 points per game still? Which, you know, again, yeah. So again, you know, it's, oh God, I would have shut up. But it's inexcusable. If you have ambitions of getting promoted, you cannot let that happen. Mick mentioned game management there. Where do we sit now on the debate about players versus manager? Because the manager's setting up the team. I think just about every ex-professional footballer you will ask their opinion on this will say that's down to the players in terms of game management and need to be a little bit more streetwise to get through those games.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like their goal, like it's a howler from Flanagan, and like there's no getting away from that. And you ask, like, how have we ended up 2-on-2 against a team of 10 men? I think there's definitely responsibility on the players. I think the thing, and I think we saw this in both Saturday and the Shrewsbury game, is that even against 10 men, I very rarely feel like we're in control of a game in the middle. Like on Saturday, like I think Neil certainly has been one of our best players this season, but Neil and Embleton in that kind of deeper role together, it just doesn't work. And to be fair, I think people might have looked at the team sheet before the game and said, that's going to be where we'll have issues. And all game, we never got control of the game. And I think, again, look, there's mitigation because, look, he's got injuries, like players who you would expect to be there aren't. But to me, it, I suppose it's kind of agreeing with you really, Stephen, like when we talk about is it on the player? It kind of showed to me that we're like crying out for a central midfielder this month. And I think if we don't get a bit of like a more solid base there, like, look, I think we've got issues in defence as well, but like you defend as a team, and again on Saturday we didn't do it, and like we just keep pressure on ourselves all game. I thought we never, even with when they had 10 men, we never really got comfortable. We never took the sting out of the game, and yeah, and I think it just showed in a way there's like a positive, because it's to me anyway, it's blindly obvious what we need to do this month now. Some people might say, well, look, once we get the injured people back, we've got enough. I'm not 100% sure that's the case, and especially when one of them is Corey Evans, who I don't think you can rely on to be fit once he's back.
I want to get to that in the second half. We've got to look at where we think we need to strengthen our loss. I think everybody's pretty much on the same page when it comes to that. Where are you on that debate, Nick? Because I know, you know, I'm not excusing the manager. I'm going to get on to his comments in the Lincoln game in particular. And some of the stuff he continues to say, which I know Graham covered on the Wise Would Say website. So I'm not, you know, just blindly backing the manager here. But is there an argument to say this is down to the players, this game management you brought up there?
I think it is largely down to the players. I think when it's like, as Chris said, it's inexcusable to be left 2-on-2. After you say it, I know it's an inexperienced team, but there is enough experience on that pitch to be able to get a hold of that and prevent that from happening, because it's our corner. And I think there was something put in the group chat the other day which showed like our furthest back player from that corner, and we just left ourselves really wide open. So for me, that's the responsibility of the goalkeeper, really, because when like kind of where like I'm not doubting him hoffing for the goal, that would be silly. But what I am saying is he's got to take ownership then and say, like, look, why have we only got so many people back? We should have more bodies back. We need to be deeper, etc. Because that's his job, and we've got to call it to be marshalling them lads on the halfway line. And then when the breakaway happens, we need to be a lot more proactive in dealing with it. So I think it's just kind of a bit of a comedy of errors from everywhere. And as much as, fair enough, Johnson does have his flaws, which I'm sure we'll come on to at some point, I do think that goal in isolation is the player's responsibility. But I think the performance levels overall on Saturday is kind of down to the manager. And his comments, fair enough, he's got to defend his players. But I do think we're quite worrying, actually, in light of what we all saw as a very kind of like poor display and an even worse result.
I think that must be aimed at trying to keep his players' heads up. That, I think you can't be thinking he's fooling anybody by suggesting that was a good away performance. What I will say, though, you know, in response to what we're saying now, you look at this being down to the players. We've said it's happened before at Shrewsbury. There have been other games where we've conceded late goals, slightly more forgivable circumstances, I guess. So I guess the argument against the manager in this situation was he keeps coming out and saying we need to learn by our mistakes. And Graham went and dug up quotes where he's been saying this for 4 years across the two sides that he's managed. It's down to him to make sure the players don't make these mistakes and they keep making it again. So
yeah,
I think you've got a point there, because it's kind of it does become a trend, doesn't it? So obviously at Fleetwood we're 2-0 up in complete cruise control of that game and we stacked it. Shrewsbury, I know we weren't in great form, but we just beat Ipswich 2-0 and we should have been full of confidence. You see it the lead early on, sending off, like literally that game is like ready made to be won. We had like a load of players out and we didn't grasp the opportunity. So I do get what you're saying. I think in isolation, it's down to the players. But as you say, when things become a trend, you do have to maybe look with the manager as well.
Yeah, and I suppose you could argue that perhaps like part of the reason like the players felt comfortable being that exposed, like pushing on that much, even though we're 1-0 up, is kind of comes back to the manager's mentality, which is very much attack first. Look, I don't think you can't legislate for like the mistake Flanagan makes, and I know plenty of people point that out anyway, but I think it's a shared responsibility, isn't it? But I think if that had happened in isolation on Saturday, you'd be like, yeah, it's entirely on the players. But I think the points you have raised about it, well, and like what you said about Graham's article, well, about learning lessons, well, feels like this has happened a few times now and the lessons aren't being learned.
How do we think about the way the manager's state of mind seems to be whenever we well, lose. He's very high when we win, and he's very low when we lose.
I was going
to
bring this.
You know, looking back to the Sheffield Wednesday ones, the one that the defeat that sticks out, where he looks like he looked like he was going to cry after that game.
Well, when he said in the interview after the game, after people had been chanting, "We're fucking shit," and one of the things he said in his interview was, "I can assure you we're not," and it's like, well, yeah, mate, like. It's just a chant. We're getting 3-0 away from home. People are just trying to cheer themselves up. And I think, but I do think he's quite, I think he's quite like, I think, well, you've nailed it there. He's quite like temperamental. And I think he is a little bit soft skinned. I mean, last Tuesday night, he got himself sent off in the last minute. And now I know that the argument is that he was looking out for Doyle, which I think is a fair argument. But even when he got sent off, he did that weird little shoulder into the fourth official and that as he was walking off, and you're like, there's no need for it, the game's gone. Like, if any, we need you to be like the calmest bloke in the stadium. And I just fear that, and I don't know, but you wonder, is that what plays into these like now infamous streaks? If he's really feeling the heat and that, that's probably going to permeate to the players, whereas if he's on and up, that's probably going to permeate to the players. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, I don't know, like that could be total bollocks, so I just said, but it feels like there's a link there between like I don't feel like he's this kind of level-headed, like what you said there, when we win, he's very high, he's on the pitch, giving it the fist bumps and all that, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it does feel like he maybe gets a little bit carried away when we're doing well, and then a little bit like down and morose when we're not, and I think that's definitely... That's definitely a question. And the problem is, at a club like this, in this division, there's an awful lot of pressure. And can he handle it? I don't think he's shown 100% yet that he can.
I think in the chaos of that Lincoln game, you're right. I think what we needed was a manager to sort of be the one who brought some calmness of the situation to say to the players, at the end of the game, like, look, you can't do that, lads. You can't react like that. You know, let's just cross this one off, put it down as a bad day at the office, you know, but you need to be measured with your response and your action. And he can't say that now when he's getting involved himself and he's reacting himself. Exactly. And I feel like, because the crowd are looking to take the frustration out on somebody, and they weren't going to do that with the players because they were flying at the time and they're playing well. And the officials tend to be the ones who get it, even if they make a decision that's like, not a terrible decision, but like slightly dodgy, they get it, don't they? The frustration comes out in them, and he's almost getting on board with that and going along with that.
But it's not an infrequent occurrence either, is it? Like, I think even games where we've been winning in that, he's quite like mouthy and chirping off on the sidelines. And it looked like that's not always a bad thing. Like, but I agree. I think there's times when you need a calm head, and you worry that it's not just a spur of the moment thing. It's everything getting on top of him. Like, he'll be under no illusions now that people are already starting to say, "Oh, we're in another streak here," and it's like, but might not be. But I have no doubt that he'll have that in his mind, and he'll be getting concerned about that. And it's probably like a vicious cycle. And I just think, I think he needs to. I mean, he's appealing the Lincoln thing, isn't he?
I said he is, yeah.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I don't know. I can understand like the merit and the argument that he was looking after Doyle, who's like an 18-year-old kid. But I just think like the way he conducted himself after he got sent off, like, I think that kind of showed what actually, if anything, you get the impression sometimes that he's kind of spoiling for a fight and wants to take his frustration out. And like you say, I think we need it. You need a calm head. You're going to need a calm head in these coming months, because the problem is, like, God forbid if we end up in the playoffs again.
I'm not sure personally about the saying he justifies sticking up for a young kid. I'm not sure at all. Callum Doyle, you know, he's a professional footballer, he's playing in a bloke's game, and he's just got to cope with that. Like, in my opinion.
I could understand the argument. I'm not saying that's why he did it. But I can understand the argument if that was, but I think his past behaviour suggests that was. I think that could have been anyone flying through and their player reacting, and he would have piled into them.
Was it the Lincoln player who was giving it the big one of the fans? Was it him who did it?
I think so, yeah.
Because his behaviour was quite strange. Like, I just felt like he, I didn't, like, can't even remember his name because he, I mean, players, you know, I don't know, he thinks he was Joey Barton or something in the way he was like jumping in front of the Sunderland fans and celebrating the goal. But you're like, who are you, mate? Like, it's not like, you know, when people like Robbie Savage and Joey Barton used to do that, at least they used to have an impact on the game and you were like aware of who they were during the game and they were making an impression on you and they were winding you up during the game and they were good players. Do you know what I mean? So they were having a direct effect, and it's different then because you're going along with that narrative throughout the whole game. This guy, I didn't even, until he did that, I hadn't even noticed him on the pitch. I just like saw his number and I was like looking up to see who he was. I was like, who are you? Who do you think you are?
Like nobody reacted, neither. Like nobody in like where we were, Steve, nobody like reacted to him doing that. It was just so embarrassing. Like, but done it for the third goal as well. It was just really bizarre. Like,
it reminded me of, can you remember when Wigan beat us? I think it was Parkinson's first game, and there was that interview with, I can't remember the player, I can't even remember his name, after the game when he said, welcome to our house.
Yeah.
And that these are our, and it was like that sort, but that's the thing, we're still like, we are still a lot of teams, I don't want to say cup final, but we are still like the big.
Well, all you're doing by behaving like that is showing everybody that you think the side you're playing against are much bigger and better than you and have a much bigger status, because you wouldn't, you know, would he do that against Shrewsbury? No, he wouldn't. So, you know, it's kind of like amateur. I'd be embarrassed if Sunderland, say, drew somebody the cup in the division above an old fan and old players went on like that, unless it's a derby match or something, do you know what I mean? Which you can understand more. Just thought strange behaviour that was. Anything else on the game before we move on and look at potential, I'm going to say transfer targets, but what we think we need to do going forward? No? Okay. When we come back, we'll do that.
I'm Kevin Kyle, and you're listening to the Wise Men Save podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Wise Men Save podcast. Right, we're going to have a quick discussion now. There's no midweek game, obviously, to preview. So I would be surprised if we're all on different pages to each other here in terms of what we think needs to be done in the transfer market. Patrick Roberts looks like that's going to get done. So perhaps even by the time we've recorded this, although they have been saying that one was close for a couple of weeks, haven't they? Any opinions on him? Mick, you're a Celtic fan.
I prefer the Rangers, put it that way.
You're a fan.
I do want Celtic top, so please don't like lynch me. Either the Union Jack mob on Twitter is going to be all over us now. You and me and Chris will have to share the hate together. But no, Patrick Roberts, he was excellent at Celtic, to be fair, and he was an integral part of that kind of invincible season under Brendan Rodgers. And there were a lot of Celtic fans who were devastated when he didn't sign. However, as I touched on a couple of weeks ago when we were first linked, he's had something of a drop-off and he's only played twice this season.
Yeah.
And that does ring massive alarm bells, because you want somebody to come in and make an immediate impact. And undoubtedly, because of like the league he's coming from, there's comparisons to Jordan Jones and Lewis Morgan, who talented players, but they didn't have a lot of first-team football under the belts and it took them a while to get going, and they were very patchy and inconsistent. However, my argument would be if Patrick Roberts had kind of continued at his rate of progression, there's no way he's ending up in League One, regardless of how big a club we are. So therefore, for us to get a player of his calibre and his kind of ability levels, there's got to be mitigating factors to it. So I think while there's like obvious drawbacks to it, I do think it will be a good signing, and if we can squeeze something out of him for the last 6 months of the season, then it could be a very worthwhile deal. And he is somebody who I think is more than capable of playing championships football. So should we get promoted, he's a free agent in the summer, and we would probably be able to attract him. So I think there's logic behind the signing. I really do. And hopefully he could replicate some of that form that he did show at Celtic. I mean, he's a very kind of direct player. He likes to get the ball and drive at defences. He's very good at kind of cutting inside and taking an early shot. And he's just a very talented footballer, and he could really kind of excite the fans. But as I say, the downside to it is his lack of first-team football recently.
Well, you think of how long it took Pritchard to get in the zone and get his sharpness, because his first few games, he was way off it. And, you know, people were rightly questioning at the time, if we just signed somebody else, you know, without an eye on the future, who's a bit of a journeyman now and his best years are behind him, and he's been, you know, absolutely fantastic the last few weeks, hasn't he? So there's going to need to be patience. I don't want to sound like I'm sitting on the fence here, but this is definitely we're going to have to just see what happens here, because as Mick says, you know, he wouldn't be, it is that old chestnut, isn't it? He wouldn't be playing for us if he was shown the form he was shown at Celtic. So sometimes you've got to just accept that. And this is one where we think this is either going to be a disaster or a revelation. Are we almost tempted to say that one, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, I know Mick said it, but like the first thing that sprang to mind for me was Jordan Jones. Just, I mean, it's the lazy comparison, really, coming from like doing decent in the Scottish League and then didn't appear on loan to the end of the season. And I think, to me, it's one of them that I know we're going to come on to what the priorities are. Like, I don't think the position compared to other ones is a priority, but assuming we get those done, it's a nice bonus. Like, I think one thing you can't say about Johnson is that he doesn't know how to set a team up to attack and get the best out of like creative players. Like, this is like both visually and like statistically, like, this is the best we've been going forward since coming down here. So I think, like, in that respect, if you've got a clearly talented player, it's kind of minimal risk, especially if he's on loan as well. I think it's really difficult to predict how it'll go. Like you just said, there could either be fantastic or it could be a nightmare. Because, like Mick said, he's only played two games this season. I think he's only played something like 48 minutes in the league, and you wonder why that is. But you know, like that's not to say that it's going to be an issue. But I think really the one probably concern that you have about it is he going to be ready to come straight at the team? And I know you just said there we're going to have patience, and I think that's probably right, because there's no way he can be match fit. And I know there was a story in the Northern Echo this morning that said they wanted to make his debut on Saturday if they can get him in by then. Which I don't know. You feel like, does that mean off the bench? Because you'd be surprised if he's going straight at the first team, especially we've already signed a lad in a position that we're pretty desperate in, and he hasn't played a minute yet.
Yeah.
I think hopefully it's a nice bonus this window, like one of those that, you know what, if it doesn't come off, it's not the end of the world. I certainly don't think it's any. I think it's the right profile of player again. It's like it's a young man, like what Mick said there. Really, if he had continued as well as he was looking a few years ago, he wouldn't be in this division. So it's, I don't have any real issue with it.
Agree with that. Are we all in agreement with each other that, would you say three signings for Sunderland, and you're looking at a straight down the spine of the team, right? Like, it goes without saying, surely. I mean, Flanagan's a fall guy at the moment. I think Flanagan's actually had a pretty decent season. He's, you know, had a couple of dodgy games, hasn't he? You know, he, along with Gooch, was at fault for the third Lincoln goal. Just as Sunderland were looking like they were gonna get back into that game. At fault again on Saturday. He's played all right this season, but what it shows to me is that they don't think they've got anybody else suitable to come in. We need a no-nonsense, don't we? Big, ugly, three-eyed monster to play at the back at centre-half, don't we?
I think the link to Flint is that you look at someone like him and you think I think he'd be a great signing.
Yeah. Great, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how true it is, because I think he's been playing quite a lot for Cardiff this season, so I'd be surprised if he was to leave. But maybe, is it just the lazy link because he's played with Johnson before? But I think someone like that, I'm all for the new recruitment strategy, getting in youth with potential and building them up as we hopefully go up through the leagues. But I think this window, it's become apparent that we need a bit of experience. We need, what you said, we need a couple of shit houses, and we need, because like I said, going forward, we're as good as we've been. That's not the issue. It's keeping the back door shut and it's getting organised. Like, I think, I know we played on Saturday, but our good spell since that shocker in autumn coincided with Bailey Wright coming back in for a portion and playing out of position, really, but he gets them organised. Like, look, I'm not saying I think Bailey Wright's an excellent centre-half, because I don't, but he gets them organised. And I think it's a shame for Flanagan, because I would agree. I think I actually thought up until the last week, I think you could make a claim for him being probably certainly in our top three or four best players this season. I think he's been excellent for the most part. But the problem with him is when he goes. And I don't think he is... I don't want to say he isn't an organiser, because I think he has been organising Doyle. And I think as much as Doyle's clearly a talented footballer, I think a lot of people have a bit of a blind spot with him because he's an 18-year-old kid and you accept that mistakes are going to come. The problem is, I think Flanagan can kind of pull Doyle out of it at the minute. I'm not sure the other way around applies, and you need... Doyle's an excellent footballer. He's really good technically, and I'm not saying he shouldn't be in the team, but you need the guy alongside him to be on the top of the game, I think, and organise. And yeah, unfortunately, I think if we were to get someone in, it'll be Flanagan who's the fall guy.
Interesting, that.
I agree. You need a balance.
I think Flanagan's been, the thing with Doyle is, like, yes, you've just said that people need to be understanding that at his age he's going to make mistakes and he needs games to play. And it's great for his development playing in this league and ironing out those mistakes and having it, coming up against the kind of centre forward that he's coming up against. But all that is doing is benefiting Man City. It's not benefiting us, is it? So, no. And not that I'm saying I think Flanagan is a player who you take through the leagues with you, you get up, because I don't think that's the case. So it is an interesting one. Like, long term, do you go for the player who's yours? But then the argument is, well, you still probably need to replace him if you get promoted anyway. Or do you go with the younger one who looks to be a better footballer than Doyle? But then whoever it is needs help.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, go on, Mick.
I was just going to say one last thing on Flint, actually. I think he could be a very astute signing from a kind of attacking viewpoint as well. Because I think we saw when we played Bristol City, when Johnson was their manager, under Simon Grayson, when obviously Jason Steele, he was got a bit of a Carrigan wreck on his line at the best of times, but they really targeted him that game, and I think Flint actually scored from just hanging across underneath the crossbar, and like he got in the end of it and they won the game, but done that corner routine two or three times, and I think when he was in League One, was
3-3 as well.
I think at Barnsley as well, but he scored some ridiculous like 15 goals in a season in League One. And I think one thing which you do have to be fair to Johnson and particularly Jamie McAllister and the other coaching staff is some of our set players this season have been absolutely excellent. And with the ability, with the ball that Pritchard can put in them in swingers on the goalkeeper, I think Flint, we could get a lot of joy. I know it's not particularly like great to watch or whatever, but I do think we could like kind of profit a lot if we did sign him, and we could get a lot of goals from set pieces as the season goes on. And I think it's a really good weapon to have in your Arsenal, so as well from a defensive point of view, I think he'd be a seven sign, and I think going forward as well, he could be surprisingly astute.
And just to say what Chris had said there, just to agree with that as well. Yes, the profile of the player in terms of the future transfer strategy does need to be somebody young who you can make a profit on, who will improve, and you can bring through the leagues with you, stuff like that. But it can't just be that kind of. It needs to have that experience as well. I put a tweet out earlier, and I should have known better, really, to bring Max Power up. I've got a very mixed response, let's say that. Although most were in favour, to be fair. I just think
I thought it was Craig or Matthew.
It's all well and good people saying, oh, you know, No, Max Power was, you know, was right to let him go. He was in the teams that failed at that, but they were very different looking teams to the one we have now. And I mentioned this last week, saying how like how great it would have been for someone like Lee Cannibal to have these kind of midfielders alongside him. And I think it's the same for Power. I really like. Yeah, I think he would have made a massive difference for us in these games where we're really struggling, and we're talking about the lack of experience and the lack of leadership in there. I just think it's a shame that he's gone before Embleton and Neil have come into their own and played. And yes, there are better options out there, and hopefully we'll go and get one in January. But would you have Evans over Power? Because I think the form Power's shown for Wigan, I would suggest not.
The problem with Evans is, like, he doesn't play enough games. I mean, we talked about this when he signed. Like, you look at him, he averages less than half the games across the season when he was at Blackburn. And we're seeing the same here. Like, I think he's only started 10 games. And I think as a footballer, actually, like, once he's got that run of games, I think he looks a decent footballer. But you don't get enough of it. And as soon as he gets going, he gets himself injured. And... yeah, I'll be honest, on Power, like, I had no qualms with him going, and to be honest, I thought he flattered to deceive a lot of us. But I do take the point, especially around experience, someone who's, like, I don't think Power was one of those people who we've seen who got overawed by playing for us in front of that. I think he thrived on it at times. My personal opinion is I don't think he was, certainly for us, I don't think he was a great footballer, but I think the point that you're getting at about experience.
Would you play him now? If he was here now, would you?
Right, with
the squad we've got right now, would you play him?
Right now, yes, because, as we said before, like, Neil and Embleton in that role, it just doesn't work. Like, not even necessarily because of inexperience, just because I don't think either of them are really your kind of shield and break the play up sort of players. They're more creative. And I think. The broader
let's see how many pellets we get.
Well, I think the broader point on all this, though, is, like, and we've kind of already touched on it, is I think all of us here are on board with kind of what looks to be like the new recruitment strategy. But I think it was Gareth, and it might be you as well, Stephen, said at the start of the season that, yes, we've got a long-term goal, but that long-term goal has to be facilitated by getting out of this division as soon as possible. Now, to me, this next 2 weeks, this month, it's really kind of like put up or shut up time, right? It's like, do people want to get out of this division this season, or are they happy to take a bit of a risk on it? Because I look at Wigan, and now I'm not saying I want Josh McGuinness. I think that shitty who they've signed from Derby would have been perfect for us. But
Ripley,
I look at their
League One.
Yep. Really good for, and what cost them like 30 grand, because Derby are having to accept whatever comes their way now. So to me, look, you can't guarantee that it's going to get them up. But to me, when you look at those signings, you're going, well, they're making, they're trying not to leave anything to chance. They're making moves to get out of this division at the first possible opportunity. And I just think, look, they've got 2 weeks, so I'm not, just like in the summer, we'll give them till the end of the window, even though I think there's a valid argument that you should expect they've got it in place at the start of January. But so far, discounting Roberts, assuming it happens, but so far we've signed a right back, which we needed, but he hasn't come straight at the team. We've played 3 games. He was playing for the under-23s the other day. And you're like, it's all well and good signing these people for the future, but if we don't go up this season, the big problem they're going to have is you're a little bit back to square one. Like, some of the key players in the team are on loan. So the goalkeeper is on loan, and he'll probably go back. Diaku, who I know a lot of people are, I'm still not 100% sold on him, but look, he's made some vital contributions in the last month and a half or so. He'll probably go back. Doyle's obviously going to go back. Good luck keeping a hold of Neil and Stewart this summer if we don't go up. And it's all well and good seeing the plan is to, you know, get, like, recycle like our best players, sell them for a profit and recycle that back into the team. But you're just giving yourself a very big uphill task. And the other point is, like, a lot of clubs in the league above, like Derby, for example, but others as well, they're not in a particularly strong position at the minute, like, financially. So really, if we had a bit of ambition, like, it's not the worst time to be getting into that division. So I think they've got to look. I fully understand, like, there's a long term goal and they don't want to make daft panic moves. But I think there needs to be a realization that, look, we've got to get promoted this year, and you've got there's the inadequacies in the squad are pretty glaring. We all agree on what they are. They know what they are, so go out and fix them.
Bravery's needed now. Like I say, I'm all for not taking ridiculous gambles and throwing money at it, but if there's a time to just remind the fans of your ambition, it's now. And that goes for selling players as well.
Yeah.
Because we're the concern now, isn't there, that, you know, more and more interest seems to be developing in terms of Dan Neil. Ross Stewart is a goal scorer. People are desperate for goal scorers. He's going to attract attention. And my concern will be, if we don't go up in the summer, certainly those two players are going to be cashed in on. I can't help feeling like that. And if we get big money for them, there's an argument to say, I wouldn't agree with it as a fan, but there is an argument to say, from a business point of view, you can kind of like understand and say, you know, we are where we are in League One. So that's another reason to get out, because there's less of a need to do that if you get up in the Championship, because it's going to, the kind of money you're going to get for them when you're in the Championship, you're going to need to spend that again to replace them, aren't you? So that's the issue.
Without chucking us down the rabbit hole again, like, if the argument was to ever come back that it's good business and the club can't turn down that sort of money, the valid question to ask is, well, with this club's been stripped of millions of pounds, it's never been put back in, so don't give us that. And I think you're right. Like, I have no issue whatsoever with doing what is, like, I suppose it's like the Brentford model, isn't it? Like, you buy cheap, you develop them, then you sell them for a massive profit. I've got no great issue with that. But I do have an issue with that if what it means is we just stay in this league forevermore. Like, Brentford kept progressing up the leagues as they were doing it. And they sold Ollie Watkins the year before they got promoted. So, you know, they were clearly tried and tested at replacing them with maybe as good as or better. Whereas with us, like, you do feel beyond this season, like, it's gonna, let's be honest, like, it's not like, say we don't go up this year, we're not gonna have the same it's not like you can go, well, they're a year further down the line, they've been through like so close one year, we'll definitely do it this year. It's gonna be a completely different team for the reasons we've just listed, and the risk there is that you get stuck if we're not already stuck.
On the subject of reckless short-termism, are we having a Defoe link? So
I was going to ask you what you thought about it, both of you. So, well introduced, Mick. What do you think? I'll put it back to you. What do you think about it?
It's one of them, isn't it? It's kind of like a fan, or kind of, are you looking at it with a more like rational head on it? I mean, to be fair, Defoe...
It'd be a low-risk signing, wouldn't it, if it was just for half a year?
Yeah, I think some people who were, I mean, look, I would be excited by it. I mean, people will turn around and say, oh, he's 39-year-old, but we all know Jermaine Defoe, like, he's a very good athlete. He keeps himself in really good nick. I think that he's got the bit of like a physique of like a player who's a few years younger than him. I think he's got the fitness levels to do it. And I think he would score goals at this level. People say, oh, at Rangers, he's only scored 4 goals in 17 in recent times. But at Rangers, he was very much coming off the bench a lot. So I don't think that's really like a particularly fair comparison.
That would be his role here, though, wouldn't it, surely?
I do think he would be coming off the bench a lot, but there's worse things in that league than playing like big man, little man up front and getting like combinations going with Stewart, because I think that Stewart's an intelligent player who makes very intelligent runs, and I think that could create the space to Defoe to exploit, I really do. So I think there's an argument to say that you could play them as a two. But I agree, we'll be coming off the bench predominantly. But I think if it could happen, I do think it would be a very good signing for a lot of reasons. I'm going to allow my heart to roll my head.
There's nothing wrong with that, Mick. You know, sometimes it's all we've got as fans.
I was going to say, Mick, to be fair, as much as... I mean, I think I have to say this because I remember when we originally signed them. I was like, oh, he's aging, he's going over the hill, was chucking loads of money down, and he ended up being like the one good signing for about 5 years. So my assumption was that he would primarily come off the bench, like last 20 minutes, run teams a bit ragged, or, you know, get on the end of things. I'd be pretty, I know the they're doing very little to like dampen expectations. I'd be pretty amazed and shocked if it came off.
I'm not expecting it. Yeah.
No, I'd be very, very surprised. Not least because, well, two reasons. First of all, I doubt he's going to come for pennies unless like you offer him like a quarter roll or something in the future. And I also think he's going to have takers probably higher up the ladder.
And in London.
And in London, yeah, exactly. So, but in terms of look like, as I've just said there, in terms of a kind of short-term get you up sort of thing, I would argue we need two strikers. If Broadhead's going to be knackered for the rest of the season, I would argue you need two. If he's happy to come and sit on the bench and come off the bench, then I've got no great issue with it. And the example I thought of was, can you remember when we signed Stern John under Keane? And you knew we were signing him that he wasn't going to be like a first team regular, or he was going to be in and out of the team kind of thing. But you had a little sum extra that we needed to help us up. And I think that's like the kind of a valid comparison here. I certainly wouldn't be against it. I think Johnson saying there's a million and one things that need to happen for it to go through is probably not far wider than the mark.
How do people then, right, just finally, how are people judging the season? We put a Twitter poll on earlier to ask what people's frame of mind was at this moment in time in terms of Sunderland's league aspirations in terms of where they're going to finish in the league table. So the options were, we'll go up automatically, we'll go up in the playoffs, more playoff heartache, or we'll miss out on the playoffs entirely. 50%, exactly 50% have gone for playoff heartache. We're just so, you know, used to this as Sunderland fans, aren't we? I can understand why people have gone for that. If you're going to put a massive positive on it, if you add up the we will go up automatically and go up in the playoffs, that comes out to 46%, so it's not that bad in terms of what people think. Only 4% think we'll miss out in the playoffs. We're not going to miss out in the playoffs, are we?
No.
You know, that's just not going to happen. What do people think? Is this? And don't say it depends what happens against Portsmouth the weekend. I'm asking your opinion now. Where are you? Where are you at?
I'm thinking promotion by the playoffs, but actually, like, I do have a little bit of like logic behind it. It's not just me going off my gut for once. So I did like a little bit of research, which I know is frowned upon on the podcast. But
go for it.
Heartily approved, Mick.
I had a little bit of a look actually, because you know when you get a bit of an idea in your head and you kind of just want to say like whether you just like talking rubbish or not. So I was just thinking to myself, we do seem to be like slipping back into this habit of drawing a lot of games. And so I looked, and before the Ipswich game, because I kind of split the season into two, because we had like pre-Ipswich and we had the bad run just before that. Then we had post-Ipswich at home where we kind of turned around, kicked in a little bit and got back up the league. So I was looking at that. Before that Ipswich game, we'd drawn one game out of our first 15. Since that game, so kind of taking it from the Shrewsbury game away from home, we've drawn 5 games out of 11. And in 4 of those games, we've had the lead in those games. And of the 6 games we've drawn overall this season, 5 of those have come from winning positions when we've dropped the points. It's only Ipswich away where we've actually come from behind to gain points in that period. So it is a little bit kind of like concerning in a way. Not the game points, sorry, but it's the only time when we've drawn a game where we've actually kind of come from behind. So that's a little bit worrying. But I think what gives me a lot less optimism that we're going to go up automatically is I looked last season at them like Lee Johnson. So from when he came in against Wigan last season, we dropped 16 points from winning positions. And so far this season, we've dropped 10 points from winning positions. And to me, that wouldn't suggest that he's a manager combined with a kind of Streaky Lee thing who's capable of sustaining an automatic promotion push, and he's never actually achieved that in his career to date. So I hate to kind of go out on a massive negative, but I'm just looking at the evidence on show, and to me, that doesn't look like a manager that's capable of winning automatic promotion.
Yeah.
The playoffs, law of averages. We can't lose in the playoffs again.
Do you want to bet? I've thought we're a playoffs team all season just because I don't think we defend well enough. I think with the squad as it currently is, I'm going to stick to that. And it's low desire to say it. I feel like I lean more towards the heartache than the kind of the dramatic like success in the last minute at Wembley. Just for the reasons we outlined like at the start of the pod, really, I worry that the manager's kind of mentality isn't maybe cut out to handle the pressure that would bring. I worry that we still won't defend well enough. That being said, like if we were to have this conversation in 2 weeks' time, and if we've done all the business that we know we need to do, I really wouldn't bet against the score automatically, because as much as, look, I think we can currently stronger team. I know people talk about the games in hand, but look, they're not going to lose 4 out of 5. But they are going to have an awful lot of games to play coming up. Teams are, I mean, Rotherham are having a little bit of a rick right now. The annoying thing is we're doing the same. I think attacking wise, we're a match for anyone. They get the defence sorted out, and I don't see why we can't be in that top two. The worry I have is that we won't, and that the manager won't learn from his mistakes defensively.
Well, he says we need to learn by our mistakes, so let's see if he can. It's only January, is all I'm thinking, and we've been here before, and we've gone up from worse positions than this, but we've also capitulated from better positions than this, I guess, over the years. So it's early days, trying to remain measured here. Tuesday game, obviously, to preview. So Matt will be back on Thursday to look ahead to the Portsmouth game on Saturday. So an interesting thing is that Max Power tweet got a couple of negative replies calling them crap and stuff like that, and he's went and he's liked those tweets, so shame on you if that is you.
Oh dear.
Shame on you for just replying and not taking him out of the fucking tag, man. Do you know what I mean? Ridiculous. Right, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.